All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 14th, 2018. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is 30 degrees with snow, fog mist, and a new fresh foot of snow overnight here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Food Nanotech Secrecy, No Testing, Smart Blobs, Nano Pills, and Ingestibles. And that actually was the third live show where we had taken a look at nanotech and nanotech in our food and how the FDA is only providing guidance but no actual laws in regards to how or what they do with nanotechnology in our food. And a lot of these companies are doing their own development down long dark hallways with a blessing from the regulatory agencies. So we're going to continue. This will be the fourth show. And then we did two rebroads on nanotech as well. So it'll actually be the fifth or sixth show on nanotech over the last week or so. We're going to continue with what I still have open on my desktop. We're going to look a lot at packaging and agriculture and some healthcare and some things that they're doing with this stuff so you can get a good feeling for how far along this technology has come very quietly. We discovered back in 2003, I believe, there was a Research and Development Act for nanotechnology signed by George Bush that went into effect in 2005, providing millions, if not billions of dollars of financing to try to commercialize some of these technologies. And then one other thing that we ran across on Friday was how the National Institute of Health, which was one of the seven or eight federal institutions receiving a bag of money to be able to then give out grants, had actually come out with a study that it showed that nanotech was potentially dangerous because one of the things that makes nanotech different is its size. Of course, the elements, we only have so many elements in the periodic table. But there's the macro-sized elements, which are still teeny, teeny, tiny. But there's macro-sized, and then there's nano-sized. And once they reduce these elements down to a nano-size, they start to behave unpredictably and do all kinds of new things that they had never seen before. We saw on Friday that aluminum in a nano-ized package can become explosive. That is something that doesn't typically happen with aluminum foil, things of that nature. So where we're going to look today, we found out that Google was eyeing nanoparticles as a new platform for healthcare. And then, of course, they've been talking about nanobots in our blood for a very long time. And Kurzweil talking about how they can cure death as a disease. And nanobots usually plays a big part. Well, the way they want to get these into your body is to tell you that it's going to cure the big C. Scientists just created tiny tumor-shrinking robots over 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. And we read this one, I think, last week at some point. Scientists figure out how to shrink tumors using robots built from DNA strands. So these are nano-sized DNA strands. And this technique was tested on breast, skin, ovary, and lung cancers in both mice and pigs. So don't worry about it, because that tiny robot is going to travel through your blood, and it's not going to stay in any of your organs, despite what the National Institute of Health says. If you got the big C, make sure you step up and get this new nanobot that cuts off the blood and oxygen supply to the tumor to kill it. And remember, anything that cuts off blood and oxygen to some part of the body not only can cure you, but it potentially could kill you. And what I found was interesting about this is that this new little nanobot was developed by Arizona State University, and they actually show up here later on in one of these other stories that we read. It just takes 2 to 4 of these invisible molecules packed inside of a hollow DNA tube to create a killer nanobot. Their clot blocks off the fresh blood supply to the tumor and causes visible tissue damage in just 24 hours of time. In the lab, researchers have tried this technique out on dozens of mice, and at least 9 of those really little adorable miniature pigs, including animals who have been injected with breast, lung, skin, and ovarian cancers. The average survival time of the mice doubled, and at least 3 of the mouse skin cancers, the treatment led to complete tumor regression. This technology is a strategy that can be used for many types of cancers. Make sure you step right up, since all of the solid tumor-feeding blood vessels are essentially the same. But there is still one major hurdle for the tiny tech to clear. Scientists haven't yet, at least to your knowledge, and at least in public, tested it out on humans. But the origami that they are using on the DNA, developed at the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering, has helped science and technology in innumerable ways, laying the foundation for how we create life-saving airbags, as well as helping NASA send solar panels into space and building prototypes of collapsible stainless steel heart stents, just to name a few. But this ancient art isn't quite ready to shuttle and dispatch drugs around the human body yet. So don't worry about your origami nanorobot, because it won't be coming in the very near future, maybe in the not too distant future. Sorry, this one caught my attention on Friday. New nanoparticle eye drops correct vision without surgery or glasses. Now, you guys know I've talked about how over the last few months I've been noticing my vision has had a bit of a change. So I did go for an eye exam last week and discovered, yes, my left eye has changed a bit. So I do have new glasses coming here, hopefully this week, but if not, early next week. But I had mentioned this to the ophthalmologist, this nanoparticle eye drop to correct your vision without surgery or glasses. Step right up and let's put a few of these nano drops in your eyes. Remember, your eyes are a direct connect to the brain, and I would probably caution against this. Not that I want to stop people from throwing their glasses out, but I don't think I'd step up for this. So it says, anyone without 20/20 vision can tell you about the struggles of wearing corrective lenses. Contacts often leave you with tired and dry eyes at the end of the day, and finding the perfect frame for your glasses can be a headache. Yeah, but it can also be fun. Especially if you go with a friend, which it didn't, but you can get a good laugh out of it. But now, nanotechnology could also make it possible to correct vision just using eye drops, which would eliminate the need for expensive and annoying eyewear. Yeah, just like LASIK surgery, blah, blah, a few laser beams in your eyeballs. No thanks. And I actually mentioned that to the doctor as well. And she told me that she had had it done 20 years ago and quote unquote never had a problem. I still don't know if I could do that, but she said it didn't hurt. Nanotechnology is a fairly recent field that involves shaping materials near the teeny tiny molecular level to create new materials or structures. These nanoparticles have wide-reaching uses, including developing more effective sunscreens and possibly screening for cancer. And maybe with a nanobot, they can treat them. In Israel, ophthalmologist David Samaja of the Shiri Zedek Medical Center in Jerusalem has used nanoparticles to correct vision. It seems like they don't have any issues experimenting on people over there. Samaja presented his team's work on this project at the Medical Center's Research Day last month, and along with scientists at Bar-Ilan University, and we've run across them with some of the brain stuff, they developed eye drops filled with nanoparticles to treat both near and far-sighted patients. So we say, these drops have not yet been tested on humans. The clinical trials are set to determine whether the solution works well as in people as it does in animals. More details about how often patients would need to use the drops and the possible side effects are so far unknown. Yeah, these won't get into your brain. And the treatment has been shown to fix mild vision problems in 10 different pigs, making it too soon to throw out your contacts just yet. So I guess little mini pigs, now that they're humanizing some of them, have become the new medical guinea pig. Ophthalmologist Robert Hogton of SUNY Stony Brook Medical School and Hospital says that long-term cornea health and efficiency would be needed to determine before this is a viable treatment. And plus, the drops were shown to correct only mild near and farsightedness in animals, though with refinements, they could eventually help those with stronger prescriptions and Coke bottle size glasses. Hey, you never know with optimization, they might be able to expand the refractive range. But for now, the quest to find the perfect frames lives on. Now, I don't know if you guys remember one of the stories that my co-writer and I did for TechSpot back, maybe October, November of last year, looked at some of the future technologies that might be coming that you might not know about. And one of them happened to be supervision. I don't know how we worded it. I don't have the story up right now. But it was interesting because there was a scientist talking about these new implantable lenses to go into your eye. They literally cut out your existing biological lens and they replaced it with this new super bionic lens that could see with super vision. So X-Men, I don't think are too far away. Maybe the next decade or so. Don't become an X-Men. So, all right, here's another one that I ran across, messenger RNA, and that would be mRNA. Messenger RNA lipid nanoparticles are a potent tool for manipulating neuronal genes, and those would be the genes in your neurons, in your brain, and they're going to use messenger RNA encapsulated lipid nanoparticles to get these into you. Maybe they could even put them in your nano eye drops. The use of RNA to manipulate gene expressions in neuroscience has been limited due to the lack of effective delivery tools, unless, of course, they could do that direct connect. And recently, lipid nanoparticles have gained an interest as safe and effective RNA delivery vehicles, both in vitro and in vivo. They'll be in the petri dish and in the body. However, traditional methods for the manufacturing of lipid nanoparticles pose numerous challenges such as operator viability and poor scalability. Here we describe the robust and reproducible manufacturing of messenger RNA lipid nanoparticles using the scalable microfluidic-based nanoassembler platform. The messenger RNA lipid nanoparticle exhibits exceptional transfection, and that would be getting into you, and exogenous gene expression efficiency on difficult to transfect primary neurons. And that would be transfection, as in getting something foreign into the DNA strand to mutate you or your DNA. And you know what? I might take this opportunity to pause for a second. Anyone who is familiar with Clint Richardson and Patrick Jordan, they are planning on working on a documentary that will be looking at a lot of these different technologies, not just from the vaccine perspective, but I hope they get into some of this crazy stuff. I have offered my help to them. And I want to get them up a website that kind of outlines their project, gives a little synopsis, and potentially looks for some sort of crowdsourcing, because making a documentary isn't cheap. But I think they could get a little more of an audience than this show can, though I do want to thank all of the listeners and the commenters of this show, because you guys are the ones who keep me going and keep me inspired to keep uncovering this crazy stuff. So I want to thank you. But anybody who is familiar with Clint's work and Patrick's knowledge, drop him a note and let him know you're behind him. Give him some encouragement, because I think this is a very important project and I want to jump both feet in and help them get this information out in front of a lot of people. So, all right, back to messenger RNA and transfection. Messenger RNA was successful in encapsulating, it was successfully encapsulated into lipid nanoparticles using the nanoassembler platform. The lipid nanoparticles encapsulating the two different messenger RNA lengths both exhibited the same sizes of 120 nanometers and the flow, and I don't know, we're going to get in, I don't really want to get into the details, the flow analysis of the nanoparticles with the fluorescent probes, blah, blah, blah. They were able to track them. Lipid nanoparticles, and we're going to look a lot at those today, are a platform that can be used to deliver nucleic acids into a cell. And I mentioned this before, they actually cloak the foreign organism inside of some sort of fat or lipid, and they slip it into the body like a slick willy. So you don't notice it until it's too late. Lipid nanoparticles mimic low-density lipoproteins, which are taken up by an endogenous pathway, and lipid nanoparticles are pH-sensitive and designed to release their payload into the cell's cytoplasm. And this just goes on and on, and it's really tiny, tiny, tiny print. So I don't think I'm going to be able to read that with these. It's like an eye test, but too early in the morning. So where are we going to continue? Let's look at some of these lipid nanoparticles. And the reason why that slide caught my attention is because we covered a story either last Wednesday or Friday from 2014 out of Cell Reports, cell.com, which is where they have lots of studies published. This one was titled, "A Single Administration of CRISPR-Cas9 Lipid Nanoparticles Achieves Robust and Persistent In Vivo Genome Editing." So they could put CRISPR-Cas9 inside of these lipid particles and insert them into the human body somehow and have persistent in vivo gene editing. Snippity snip, let's cut a couple neurons and make some edits without the person knowing. Maybe we can change their personality or some trait in their brain, who knows? But it's pretty crazy. With the development of clinically viable delivery methods presented as one of the greatest challenges in the therapeutic application of CRISPR-Cas9 mediated genome editing. But here we report on the development of lipid nanoparticle mediated delivery systems that with a single administration, and that would be just once, it enabled significant editing of mouse transthyrin, which is a gene in the liver with 97% reduction in the serum protein levels that persist for at least 12 months. These results were achieved with a lipid nanoparticle delivery system that was biodegradable as well as well-tolerated. The lipid nanoparticle delivery system was combined with sgRNA, having a chemical modification pattern that was important for high levels of in vivo activity. The formulation was similarly effective in a rat model. And our work demonstrates that this lipid nanoparticle system can deliver CRISPR-Cas9 components to achieve clinically relevant levels of in vivo genome editing with concomitant reductions of TTR serum proteins in the liver, highlighting the potential of this system as an effective genome editing platform. Now, if you go back to the last few shows where we take a look at how a lot of these food companies are creating quote-unquote nutraceuticals, these would be foods that were now healthy for you that didn't used to be considerably healthy before. There really is no huge amount of regulation, just guidance from the Food and Drug Administration. And as long as they aren't changing the formulation of the food too grossly, they don't really have to get any type of further testing done, even though nanosized particles react differently than macrosized particles, says the National Institute of Health. But now, of course, we also discovered that ingestibles and nanotechnology are fully changing medicine. So now we have CRISPR-Cas9 in genome live editing using lipid nanoparticles as a delivery mechanism. All right. So now here's another paper. This is out of Springer.com. Solid lipid nanoparticles, and that would be the temperature at which it is a solid versus a liquid. Solid nanoparticles are typically solid at body temperature. Solid lipid nanoparticles as delivery systems for bioactive food components. We also read about smart blobs. Smart blobs were a really disturbing idea that one of the corporations was already working on. There was a lot like Willy Wonka, where you had a three-course meal and a piece of chewing gum and all the different flavors in the correct order. Even though all you were chewing was a piece of gum, it would be synthetic flavoring. The inclusion of bioactive compounds such as carotenoids, omega-3 fatty acids, or fisterols is an essential requisite for the production of functional foods designed to improve the long-term health and well-being of consumers worldwide. Be a resistant consumer. You don't want to be eating this stuff because you are the guinea pig. It is untested, and that was per a whole bunch of stories that we read last week. And they are testing it right now on the general populace. To incorporate these functional components successfully into a food system such as yours, structurally sophisticated encapsulation matrices have to be engineered, which provides maximal physical stability, protects the ingredients against chemical degradation, and allows for precise control over the release of encapsulated components during the mastication and digestion to maximize absorption. Well, that was a big mouthful. But they're going to be able to manipulate and control the structure of your food system and the different encapsulated components that they do a slick willy and slide them in there without you knowing. And we don't want them to have control over things that are inside of our bodies. A novel encapsulation system initially developed in the pharmaceutical industry to deliver lipoic bioactive components is solid lipid nanoparticles. Solid lipid nanoparticles, more affectionately abbreviated as SLN, consists of crystallized nanoemulsions with a dispersed phase being composed of solid lipid carrier bioactive ingredient mixtures. Contrary to the larger colloidal solid lipid particles, specific crystal structures can be dialed in solid lipid nanoparticles using specific surfactant mixtures and ensuring that the mean particle size is below 100 to 200 nanometers. Moreover, in solid lipid nanoparticles, microphase separation of the bioactive compound from the solidifying lipid matrix can be prevented, resulting in an even dispersion of the encapsulated compound on the solid matrix. This is a lot of gobbledygook. Thereby improving the chemical and physical stability of the bioactive compounds. In this review article, which you have to purchase for $39.95, we will briefly introduce the structure, properties, stability, and manufacturing of solid lipid nanoparticles and discuss their emerging use in food science. Well, we're not going to get the rest of that story because I don't have $40 to spend on a scientific study. But there was something that came out of the Royal Science, something or other, Royal Society of Chemistry peer review publication. This is the Royal Society of Chemistry analysis out of Seoul, South Korea. Bioactives, and that is exactly what we were just talking about, which are isolated from different sources like plants, animals, etc., are known to be ideal candidates to treat and prevent chronic health problems such as obesity, hypertension, cardiovascular diseases, cancer, etc. Unfortunately, due to our 21st century lifestyle and food habits, humans are consuming healthy bioactives less than are recommended, unless you don't know about it. And hence, there is an increasing demand from consumers for food products which are fortified with these bioactives, now with omega-3s, now with probiotics. Remember, when the Cheetos look like they're healthy, it's time to raise an eyebrow. However, the addition of these healthy bioactives and food products for fortification is a challenging job, like your cereal, now fortified with synthetic vitamins. And the main cause is their susceptibility to a complex matrix present in food products and the GI tract, such as your pH, your temperature, the enzymes, etc. These etc. are a little too much in the scientific paper. Though colossal effort has been put by researchers to successfully translate drug delivery technology in your food for bioactive delivery to protect these susceptible bioactives during production, storage, and consumption, and that would be when you eat it, without your knowledge, success is limited. So due to their near impeccable stability for the delivery of bioactives in terms of toxicity, scalability, and acceptability, solid lipid nanoparticles are drawing attention from food technologists. In this review, efforts have been made to present an overview about the expectation and the suitability of solid lipid nanoparticles for the delivery in your food of bioactives, the selection of ingredients, and their importance in achieving those expectations, and industrially feasible methodologies for their production. Is quoted by Hippocrates, the father of modern medicine. He says, quote, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. So now they are going to take that to a painful level. So in the last few years, there has been a growing realization of the pivotal link between your diet, your health, and your well-being. So stop eating those Cheetos. Thus, consumers prefer food products which are tasty and healthy. And further, consumers expect food to provide some additional physiological functions for promoting general body development and disease prevention. So because of all these attributes, we decided that slipping stuff you didn't know about that would make things good for you into your food is going to be a good idea and a way to sell it to you without telling you until we tell you 10 years later. These attributes required to the food are provided by bioactive molecules which possess biological activity in addition to their nutritional value. And that would be biological activity that we programmed into them. Bioactive molecules occur naturally, normally at very low concentrations, so hence the fortification is highly desired to increase the concentration of specific and desired bioactives in food products. Unfortunately, direct addition of these healthy bioactives to your food products results in an unwanted change in the organoleptic properties of the food products, which would be something like a bad odor or a taste or an undesired mouthfeel, like really gooey. And it also destabilizes the product by forming aggregates and sentiments. Even then, due to their pharmacokinetic mismatch, a consumer does not get the full benefit after consuming these really gross food products without their desired organoleptic attributes. So we've decided to use encapsulation technology, which is originally used in the pharmaceutical industry to increase the stability and the bioavailability of drug molecules. And it has also been in use in the food sector for several years for similar purposes without required modification. Wink, and you didn't know about it, and the FDA let it go. Encapsulation can be defined as a, quote, process of entrapping sensitive materials into the matrix of the carrier material, which forms the protecting wall and the generally resistant to sensitive environments for which entrapped materials are not. The encapsulation process may result in the formation of carriers from micro to nanometer size, depending on various factors which are used for their fabrication. What's interesting is somewhere in the string of stories for today, I had a story that popped up in my feed over the weekend. Here it is. It was from 4 years ago about these DNA nano cages using DNA origami to be able to encapsulate things and get them inside of things. I don't know if they're related, but I see a little connecting dot. So in regards, since the last two decades, food scientists and industries have been thriving hard to develop novel delivery systems to carry food bioactives, which can be used to fortify food products with desired bioactives or a combination of bioactive molecules. Problems which are associated with food bioactives are shown in the figure above. And the main objective of this review is to provide insight into the expectations from a bioactive delivery system and the suitability of solid lipid nanoparticles in your food to fulfill those expectations and describe how lipid nanostructures can be engineered to meet those expectations. I mean, no one's engineered food. I know I don't. So ideally, the development of an encapsulation system to deliver bioactives is expected to possess the following properties. A, it is suitable to entrap bioactives with different physicochemical properties, and that would be the melting point, the solubility, the stability, the origin, in its maximum quantity and quality. B, it also has the capacity to deliver the entrapped cargo to the right place at the right time in the right concentration. And C, it can protect the entrapped bioactives both from adverse environments, and that would be the temperature, oxygen, light, etc., in the complex matrix of the food product and during the consumption of the product until those entrapped bioactives reach the desired site of action. And D, it should prove to be affordable and cheap when the cost-benefit ratio is considered. Well, there's actually more alphabet here on the next page. E, it should be versatile enough to allow its use in different types of foods, and that would be in liquids, powders, and gels. Remember, Soylent Green. And F, it should not interfere with the desired qualities of the final food product, and that would be the taste, odor, appearance, and viscosity. G, it should be easy to prepare but stable in complex processing and storage conditions to be used in food products. So it's anything that's processed, caution. H, it should be easily scalable. I, it should be stable upon sterilization methods which are used to sterilize food products. J, raw materials for fabrication should be easily available in abundance. And K, it should be stable in various food formats. Thus, it needs to be stable in aqueous dispersions and also upon lyophilization and spray drying. In order to obtain the mentioned characteristics above from the design delivery system, the major determining factors are the selection of the carrier material and the production method. A variety of materials are available to use as carrier materials to slip the stuff into your food to obtain the desired characteristics mentioned above. However, limitations among them are certified as, quote, generally recognized as safe, and that is how it goes through the FDA, which can be added to food products to obtain the desired functional attributes like controlled and targeted deliveries, taste and odor masking, so maybe it really tastes like rotten meat, but they make it taste like cherries, and to protect from degradation. Further, it is noteworthy that due to the preference for fully natural materials as a carrier, among the consumers and producers, they could put a stamp saying it's fully organic. Several generally recognized as safe approved materials, which are used in the drug delivery, are not preferred for the food sector to deliver bioactives. In addition, and I'd be interested to know what they are actually using. In addition, the presence of non-food particles in food products in large quantities also compromises the nutritional value of products. Hence, in the food sector, delivery systems which are comprised of natural food additives are preferred. Important factors which need to be considered before selecting a carrier material are A, interaction between the ingredients and the carrier material, B, its intended usage, which would be products in which it needs to be added and processed and stored conditions of that particular product. C, the effect of the carrier material on the consistency and the structure of the product. D, the presence of other co-excipient things in the system and their interacting behavior with the carrier materials. E, biological barriers, ding, ding, which should be overcome in order to obtain the desired biological activity. That would be like crossing that blood-brain barrier or that gut barrier. And F, its toxicity upon chronic ingestion. And that would be like eating an entire bag of Cheetos in one setting. So now let's look at lipids and lipid-based delivery systems. This is why it is so easy to encapsulate them in fats. Lipids are groups of natural molecules which include mono, di, and triglycerides, fats, waxes, sterols, and phospholipids. These lipids are important constituents for the existence of life, and starting from the fetal growth, they are required in all stages of life to perform specific activities or to maintain the general health of the organism. So now let's bastardize them, hijack them, and make them a Trojan horse. In living organisms, they provide energy and act as a reserve source of energy and aid the absorption of fat-soluble vitamins, nutraceuticals, and drug molecules. Lipids play an important role as the components which give desired qualities like texture, aroma, color, flavor, satiety, mouthfeel, and rheological properties to food products. Thus, they are our targets. Due to their high acceptability, non-toxicity, and suitability to use in food products, lipid-based delivery systems are rapidly gaining interest among food scientists for application in food systems to deliver bioactives. I'm referring to lipid-based delivery systems that includes liposomes, solid lipid nanoparticles, nanostructured lipid carriers, and emulsions. This article will provide an overview about solid lipid nanoparticles, which is the most rapidly developing carrier system among lipid-based delivery systems for food applications due to their inherent characteristic, and that would be stability in complex systems and their ability to withhold the bioactives within the core of the nanoparticle, which suit the food application. These characteristics are seen less in other lipid-based delivery systems like in liposomes and emulsions, and due to the high cost and reports of toxicity, synthetic polymeric nanoparticles are less preferred in food delivery compared to drug delivery systems. So it's all right if it's a little bit toxic and we put it in the drugs. So these solid lipid nanoparticles were first introduced in 1991. Yes, let's go way back then. That's when I first started reading about nanotechnology in Scientific American. As a drug carrier that can be fabricated in a submicron sized range from 50 to 500 nanometers and using high melting point lipids, and that would be lipids that are solid at room temperature and also at body temperature, as well as stabilized by surfactants, which are biodegradable, biocompatible, and non-toxic. Solid lipid nanoparticles based on paraacylcalxarenes have been prepared and studied for the purpose of drug delivery, and though these nanostructures can be used to entrap and deliver both hydrophilic and hydrophobic molecules, they are preferred for the delivery of hydrophobic molecules. That would be something with water, I would think, with hydro. The main reason is the high affinity of hydrophobic molecules to the hydrophobic matrix formed in the solid lipid nanoparticle compared to the low affinity of the hydrophobic molecules to the hydrophobic matrix. I have no idea what that meant. But still, in the past, there are reports that these solid lipid nanoparticles were used to deliver nutraceuticals, proteins, and drugs. And I don't know if we're going to get to the designer proteins, but maybe that will be on Friday. So the main features of solid lipid nanoparticles which promote their food application, number one would be the production. Solid lipid nanoparticles can be fabricated using methods like high pressure homogenization and microfluidization, which can be easily scalable for industrial production. Well, homogenization and microfluidization sounds like something that could be done in a dairy farm or a dairy processing facility. Several lipid-based nanoparticle formulations are in the market for drug and cosmeceutical delivery. Solid lipid nanoparticles can be fabricated without using organic solvents. You gotta love when they use solvents in your food, which otherwise are not acceptable to use in food products. Well, phew! Solid lipid nanoparticles can be sterilized using techniques which are used to sterilize food products, and that would be heat and UV sterilization. Solid lipid nanoparticles can also be obtained both in the liquid and the solid forms, hence they are easy to use in both solid and liquid food products. Next section is acceptability. Lipids, which are used to fabricate solid lipid nanoparticles, are non-toxic and biocompatible. Several food-grade materials are available, and something called tristerin is an FDA-approved food additive. Raw materials used in the production of solid lipid nanoparticles, such as lipids, surfactants, and co-surfactants, are easily available in large scales with a preferred quality. Food-grade surfactants like polyoxyethylene sorbitene ugalinate, which is also known as Tween 80, as well as proteins, can be used to fabricate solid lipid nanoparticles. And in order to be best suited for oral delivery, and they'll be through your mouth, this is the preferred route of administration for nutraceuticals. So they're going to feed it to you, and you're not even going to know it. So now, next section, biological activity. In order to be best suited for oral delivery, this is the preferred route of administration for a nutraceutical, and that would be then allowing it to be absorbed across the gut barrier into your blood. Solid lipid nanoparticles provide chemical protection to the encapsulated nutraceuticals against chemical degradations in the product, and that would be pH, salt, and temperature in your body and during storage. Solid lipid nanoparticles protect susceptible nutraceutical agents against degradation in the GI tract. And solid lipid nanoparticles provide chemical protection to the encapsulated nutraceuticals against chemical degradation. Solid lipid nanoparticles enhance the bioaccessibility of nutraceuticals in the intestine by forming micelles, which I don't know what those are, micelles, micelles, and the rate and the size of the nutraceutical release can be controlled by varying solid lipid nanoparticle sizes and composition. So, I don't know, do we keep going? I think we move on to the next story, because it seems like there's a lot of solid lipid nanoparticle usage in our food already going on. So this one was one that I found in my feed that said, oh, 4 years ago you posted this story. And I was like, oh, this is right along the same lines of the stuff we're talking about today. Phys.org. This is a study out of Harvard University, March 13th, 2014. So that was a year ago, 4 years ago yesterday. Self-assembling nano cages are the largest standalone 3D DNA structure yet. Move over, nanotechnologists, and make room for the biggest of the small. Scientists at the Harvard's Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering, have built a set of self-assembling DNA cages that are one-tenth as wide as a bacterium. The structures are some of the largest and most complex structures ever constructed solely from DNA, and they report today in the online edition of Science. Moreover, the scientists visualized them using DNA-based super-resolution microscopy and obtained the first sharp 3D optical images of the intact synthetic DNA nanostructures in a solution. In the future, scientists could potentially coat the DNA cages to enclose their contents, packaging drugs for delivery to tissues or maybe even nutraceuticals. And like a roomy closet, the cage could be modified with chemical hooks that could be used to hang other components such as proteins or gold nanoparticles. This could help scientists to build a variety of technologies, including little tiny power plants, minuscule factories that produce specialty chemicals inside of you, or even high-sensitivity photonic sensors that diagnose disease by detecting molecules produced by abnormal tissue, potentially inside of you. I see exciting possibilities for this technology, says Pen Yin, PhD, a core faculty member at the Weiss Institute and assistant professor of systems biology at Harvard Medical School and the senior author on the paper. DNA, of course, is best known as a keeper of genetic information, but scientists in the emerging field of DNA nanotechnology are exploring ways to use it to build tiny structures for a variety of applications. These structures are programmable in that scientists can specify specific sequences of letters or bases in the DNA, and those sequences can then determine the structure it creates. So far, most researchers in the field have used a method called DNA origami, and we've run across that a lot, in which short strands of DNA staple two or three separate segments of a much longer strand together, causing that strand to fold into a precise shape. DNA origami was pioneered by the Weiss Institute core faculty member William Shi, PhD, who is also an associate professor in the Department of Biological Chemistry and Molecular Pharmacology at Harvard Medical School and a Department of Cancer Biology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Yin's team has built different types of DNA structures, including a modular set called single-stranded DNA tiles or DNA bricks, kind of like Lego. We talked about that the other day. These parts can be added or removed independently, but unlike Lego, they spontaneously self-assemble. But for some applications, scientists need to build much larger DNA structures than anyone has built so far. So add to their toolkit, Yin's team sought a much larger building block to match. Yin and his colleagues first used DNA origami to create extra-large building blocks in the shape of a photographer's tripod, and the plan was to engineer these tripod legs to attach end-to-end to form a polyhedra, which is an object with many flat faces that themselves are triangles, rectangles, or polygons. And yeah, it looks like a little DNA buckyball. But when Yin and his paper's three lead authors, we're going to skip all their names, built bigger tripods and tried to assemble them into a polyhedra, the large tripod legs would splay and wobble, which kept them from making a polyhedra at all. So the researchers got around this problem by building it into a horizontal strut, then stabilizing each pair of legs, just as a furniture maker would use a piece of wood to bridge the legs of a wobbly chair. And to glue the tripod legs together end to end, they took advantage of the fact that matching DNA strands pair up and adhere to each other. They left a tag of DNA hanging off of the tripod leg and matching tags on the different sides of the legs that they wanted to pair with. And the team programmed the DNA to fold into a sturdy tripod 60 times larger than previous DNA tripod building blocks and 400 times larger than DNA bricks. These tripods then self-assembled into a specific type of a three-dimensional polyhedron, all in a single test tube. Thank goodness it wasn't in vivo. But by adjusting the length of the strut, they built tripods that range from upright to splay-legged, and more upright tripods formed polyhedra with fewer faces and sharper angles, such as a tetrahedron, which has four triangular faces. More splay-legged tripods form polyhedra with more faces, such as a hexagonal prism, which is shaped like a wheel of cheese and has eight faces, including its top and its bottom. In all, they created five polyhedra, a tetrahedron, a triangular prism, a cube, a pentagonal prism, and a hexagonal prism, all out of DNA. After building these cages that then they can put chemicals into, the scientists visualize them using a DNA-based microscopy method that they developed called DNA paint. And in DNA paint, short strands of modified DNA caused points on the structure to blink, and the data from the blinking images revealed structures too small to be seen with conventional light microscopes. DNA paint produced ultra-sharp snapshots of the researchers' DNA cages, which are the first 3D snapshots ever of a single DNA structure in its native watery environment. Bioengineers interested in advancing the field of nanotechnology need to devise manufacturing methods for DNA that build sturdy components in a highly robust manner and develop self-assembly methods that enable formation of nanoscale devices with defined structures and functions. DNA cages and the methods for visualizing this process in a solution represent a major advance along this path. So 4 years ago, they were already here, and this has got to be concerning. Because the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering was also the place that was the home of the robo-bees. And the robo-bees were the reason that they came up with a teeny tiny manufacturing process such as origami. All right, so now we're going to, now that we got into DNA and nanotechnology, here's another story that I ran across in one of the notes of the rebroads on nanotech that we aired last week. And this one is out of a publication titled science20.com and science2.0.com. GNA, and that would be G as in George, DNA's chemical cousin, is a nanotechnology building block. And this article was dated April 28th, 2008. So this is almost just a month shy of being 10 years ago. In the rapid and fast-growing world of nanotechnology, researchers are continually on the lookout for new building blocks to push innovation of discovery to scales much smaller than the tiniest speck of dust. In the Biodesign Institute, where, Arizona State University, hey, we've run across them again. Researchers are using DNA to make intricate nano-sized objects, and working at the scale holds great potential for advancing medical and electronic applications and merging you with the machine. DNA, often thought of as the molecule of life, is the ideal building block for nanotechnology because they self-assemble, snapping together into shapes based on natural chemical rules of attraction, just like Weiss is doing. And it is a major advantage for biodesign researchers like Hao Yan, who rely on the unique chemical and physical properties of DNA to make their complex nanostructures like tetrahedrons. While scientists are fully exploring the promise of DNA nanotechnology, Biodesign Institute colleagues in Arizona are working to give researchers brand new materials to aid their designs. In an article recently published in the Journal of American Chemical Society, they put their research team as having been the first to make self-assembled nanostructures composed entirely of glycerol nucleic acid, and that would be GNA, which is the synthetic analog of DNA. Everyone in DNA nanotechnology is essentially limited to what they can buy off the shelf or mail order, I'm going to add, 10 years in the future. But we wanted to build synthetic molecules that assembled like DNA, but had additional properties not found in natural DNA. The DNA helix is made up of three simple parts. They would be a sugar, a phosphate molecule that forms the backbone of the DNA ladder, and then one of four nitrogenous bases that makes up the rungs, and that would be CATG. The nitrogenous base pairing rules in the DNA chemical alphabet fold DNA into a variety of useful shapes for nanotechnology. Given that an A can only form a zipper-like chemical bond with TG and only pair with C, which I didn't know that. In the case of GNA, the sugar is the only difference with DNA, and the 5-carbon sugar commonly found in DNA, called deoxyribose, is substituted by glycerol, which contains just 3 carbon atoms. I didn't know that either. Chaput, the head researcher, has a long-standing interest in tinkering with the chemical building blocks used to make molecules like proteins and nucleic acids that do not exist in nature. Well, Chaput, you better stop that stuff. And when it came to synthesizing the very first self-assembled GNA nanostructure, Chaput had to go back to the basics. The idea behind the research was what to start with a simple DNA nanostructure that we could just mimic. And that's exactly what they're doing, bio-inspired engineering. They are stealing the secrets from nature to make their monsters. The very first self-assembled DNA nanostructure was made by Ned Siemens' lab at Columbia University in 1998, the very same laboratory where Arizona State University professor Hao Yan received his PhD. Chaput's team, which included graduate student Richard Zhang and Elizabeth McMullen, were not only able to duplicate these structures, but unique to GNA, they also found that they could mirror image nanostructures. In nature, many molecules important to life, like DNA and proteins, have evolved to exist only as right-handed, but the GNA structures, unlike DNA, turned out to be enantiomeric molecules, which means that in chemical terms, they could be both right and left-handed. Making GNA is not tricky. It is just three steps, and with three carbon atoms, only one stereo center, says Chaput, and it allows us to make these right and left-handed biomolecules to totally bastardize life on planet Earth. People who have actually made left-handed DNA, but it is a synthetic nightmare, and to use it for DNA nanotechnology, it could actually never work. It is too high of a cost to make, so no one could ever get enough material. But the ability to make mirror image structures opens up brand new possibilities for messing up the planet. And the research team also found a number of physical and chemical properties that were unique to GNA, which includes having a higher tolerance to heat than DNA nanostructures. So now with a brand new material in hand, which to put dubs unnatural nucleic acid structures, the group hopes to explore the limits on the topology and the type of structures that they can make. We think that if we take this as a basic building block and begin to build more elaborate structures in 2D, and we will see in an atomic force microscopy images, I think it would be interesting to see where all this all goes. Oh yes, when researchers come up with all kinds of clever designs. And now, I don't know. Well, here's one more. This one just came out the other day, but we read about this probably a few months ago. Gene editing just got so damn precise that researchers can now change just one single letter in DNA code. They can flip the switches of C, A, T, and G. So this is huge news for fixing genetic diseases and another reason for you to eat your nutraceuticals. Gene editing has the power to completely shape our world, and don't worry about it because we can encapsulate CRISPR-Cas9 in lipid nanoparticles and put it into food. But now researchers in Japan have developed a new gene editing technique that uses CRISPR alongside a DNA repair system to modify single DNA in the human genome. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday.